Again, good morning and welcome to the National Spiritual... you see what condition we are in. Welcome to the USPA Annual Conference. And I've made that error, by the way, because I am from the National Spiritual Science Center in Washington, D.C. And the usual patter starts off with that title. We are delighted to have a fine turnout, and more than that, very pleased to have with us in this conference some of the most outstanding researchers on the frontiers of science. And although we call it the frontiers of science, as you've probably been observing, much of traditional science and orthodoxy is looking to us for directions of development and is beginning to take part and beginning to follow our leads. Fortunately, many of the concepts that have been promoted and presented in these conferences and by researchers in the past 20 years are now appearing in orthodox form in traditional science. Just a few quick announcements before we begin the program. As you know, all the lectures are copyrighted by USPA, 1983, and permission must be obtained from the National Office prior to public use or publishing. If you're planning to publish, be sure to contact us. You may use audio tape lectures for your private use only, and they're not to be duplicated. These are copyrighted. Tapes from this year's conference will be available in the fall newsletter. The announcement will appear in the newsletter. Photographs are not permitted to be taken of the conference proceedings, of its officers, participants, or lecturers. The official photographer will be taking photographs. Now, be prepared to have your film confiscated if you do take photographs. Yes? Precisely. If you approach the individual you wish to photograph and have his agreement, then it's okay with us. For those of you who are traveling, of course, transport to and from the airport is the responsibility of each traveler. We have not made special arrangements except for invited speakers in order to facilitate their movement in and out, many of whom have to arrive and leave on short notice. So please make your own arrangements for departure, which is Sunday at 4. The secretary has asked me to remind you that the wine and cheese sessions in the evening are in the terrace room, which is in the lower level of the cafeteria. If you've been unable to find the terrace room, go over to the cafeteria where we have our meals and go to the lower level of the cafeteria. We have received messages from many parts of the world congratulating us on the conference. And one of the messages we've received is to be read to you, and it's from the President, David Rhodes. My sincere welcome, both personally and in the name of the U.S. Psychotronics Association, to each one of you. I regret that circumstances do not permit me to be with you in person this year. I missed the initial meeting in Indianapolis in 1975, and this is the first conference I have not been at since then. I thank you all for the privilege of serving in one office or another during all these years. Please know that I have not left the fold, that I plan to be with you next year and the following years, and that during this coming year, I hope to do some of the work that none of us in the executive group have been able to really devote any time to. Although I will be many miles away, I am hereby volunteering what time I may have in order to continue participation in and service to the USPA. Our prime directive is to serve the public, to serve mankind, if you will, through the practice, development, and teaching of the science of psychotronics. Of necessity, the first phase of this work is to define and codify psychotronics, thus bringing it into the recognized status of a true science. This has to go beyond talking and theorizing and must involve much doing. The field that provides our theme this year, agriculture, has probably seen more doing in terms of demonstrable and supportable results than any other field. This must now be reinforced and extended to other areas. Be aware that we cannot force recognition. We must earn it. We must demonstrate professionalism. We must demonstrate personal and professional responsibility and integrity. We must work diligently and not fight angrily among ourselves. I hope that when you leave this conference, you will carry with you renewed and bolstered inspiration to go, to do, to demonstrate. Thank you. And now, it's time for the first speaker this morning. Right. I'm reminded that I should inform you of the changes of positioning of the programs and the papers. So please, if you will, take out your programs and make some notations. Beginning at 1 o'clock today, those papers being presented in the upper level, starting with George Hathaway, rather, those papers being presented here in the lower level are going to the upper level. From 1 o'clock on to the end of the day, all of these papers are moved to the upper level. We have certain equipment that's available up there that we don't have here. Is everyone following me? All that's happening is that at 1 o'clock there's a switch. The left side of the page at 1 o'clock becomes the right side of the page and vice versa. Are there any other changes, Bob, besides that?
Morris Kelly will present right. That paper, and Rosenblatt is out, and this is the name and title.
At 3:30, the segment reserved for Sam Lentine, Consciousness Vibrations. Sam is not able to be present at the conference, and the paper will be presented by the co-author, Morris Kelly. That's at 3:30. And that, of course, will be in the upper level. At 4:15, in the former upper level, on the right side of the page, the slot reserved for Stephen Rosenblatt has now changed to Hugh Scott, and the subject, low-frequency sound and electromagnetic radiation and effects on health and the home. Hugh Scott, this is at 4:15. Hugh Scott, low frequency sound and electromagnetic radiation and effects on health and in the home. I believe that takes care of all of the changes. And now we proceed with the first paper for 1983. We're delighted to have with us a gentleman of attainment, Marcel Fogel, senior scientist at IBM for 26 years, who specializes in material science, in magnetic coding for magnetic disks. Those of you who are using computers and have been using them for years, the magnetic disks come from Marcel Fogel's work. He works on rare earth phosphors, liquid crystal systems, study of the energies of mind, and the utilization of those energies in healing and psychotherapeutic devices. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to present Marcel Fogel.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen and friends, it is good to be here and to share with you for the first time the information that has been accumulated by us on the Delaware camera. This has been one of the great mysteries of the Radionic Association. It has been accumulated with story after story of all sorts of weird things, and today, this morning, I will try to give you the most concise, factual information that I possibly can on what we know at this moment in time on the camera. The camera is a remarkable work of one of our brilliant people who have worked in this field of radionics, George Delaware, Marjorie Delaware, Corte, and his associates. And I dedicate lovingly this lecture to them and the pioneering work they have done in the discovery of new particles that we have in space that are capable of being recorded by this camera. It is not only a system for recording a picture, but it reveals that we are, you and I, high energy generators of fields. We generate these fields, propagate them in space, and with very simple devices, can record them on film or plate, and they are equivalent to what we see in the linear accelerator, where millions and millions of dollars are spent to capture these tracks that they study in the bubble chamber. How can this be? This is the mystery, and this is what I wish to share with you in the time that we have together. The realization that we are here on a forefront of new science. The science of mind, the science of spirit, and above all, the science of the soul. That which brings man into the image and likeness of a divine mind or God. Working with these instruments, I come to total realization of the divine, supreme mind that exists everywhere. I come to the realization that we are one, that there is only a minutiae of differentiation in this physical form, which we call matter, But when we step up the vibration, then that matter takes on this divine aspect and radiates that perfection of the one mind. And that is what you can see in this camera, provided you set the rates and the dials correctly. It has taken a lifetime, but every one of you here are equally capable of operating this camera. To understand the Delaware camera, you should know a bit of the phenomena of luminescence, the conversion of energy in solids. The principle of luminescence comprises the adsorption of radiation by a gaseous, liquid, or solid, a quanta of radiation. There is then a perturbation of the atomic structure or electronic cloud pattern around the nucleus to a higher energy state. This then either spontaneously degrades back to the ground state. This higher energetic state is called the conduction band. The lower state is the state of equilibrium or rest. That rest state is still in a state of vibration or motion. When these particles of energy or quanta are absorbed, there is a shifting of the crystalline lattice structure. It perturbs. Now, you can build into this perturbed lattice a discontinuity by a proper heating and cyclic perturbation of your furnace, so that when the energy moves in this conduction band, it locks into one of these defect lattice systems. Can you hear me? Oh. Now, this then gives you the opportunity to thermally agitate that crystal, and then that quanta of energy moves up into the conduction band, and out comes light, out comes radiation, out comes even X-rays. These are called phosphors. As we have a quanta of radiation in the electromagnetic spectrum, so we too have an equivalent state of quantumness in this area of energy we call mind stuff, eloptic energy, or the energy of pranic force. Our mind can take the energy of space, draw it in with breath, accrete it into a pattern, oscillate that pattern, and expel it with the outgoing breath into a discrete vibratory force. That is what we capture on plate with the Delaware camera. To capture that, we must do three important steps. Number one, we set up a vibrating audio carrier wave. We set up a note or tone which beats in harmony or in synchronization to the fundamental note of the earth frequency and our note. What you generate in the radionic rates that you determine with the turning of the dials is your note. What you determine is the oscillating vibration of matter consolidated into form. Because when matter is brought into form, it oscillates. It manifests its form by a vibration. When you interfere with that vibration, matter does not exist. You can disintegrate matter by just interfering with its form. A minute interference with the form aspects and the matter separates and no longer is. Now, we must do three things. It's a triple hologram, what is in the camera. One, you find the resonant oscillation of the earth frequency with a spiral dial, and you set that. Two, you set a carrier vibration of your frequency, and you set that note. Superimpose it onto any random noise. All you need is a bit of vibration, and you modulate that vibration with your carrier wave, and it is transported. And third, you set the vibration of an object that you wish to investigate or look at. And in so doing that, it injects its carrier wave on a noise spectrum, white noise. Now, the remarkable discovery of George Delaware was that sound can be transported by a magnetic field. Sound can be directed and consolidated or dispersed through a magnetic field, a bar magnet. The basic discovery of George Delaware was finding that he can tune these vibrations and focus them in space with a magnetic rod. And in so doing, bring a burst of energy which is no longer sound, but a preform of matter. It is the precursor towards that which we call the material world. So he then can bring into being through the transposition through a bar magnet of sound a formation of a preform of matter. That then can be reflected with parabolic reflectors focused with lenses onto a sensitive plate. Now, you deal with only one aspect of what I am saying, and you will only get a stripped version incapable of understanding when you look at the plate. When you deal with all three aspects, you have a multi-dimensional hologram, which now, with a flat plate, I am seeing but a fragment. I will be working when I return with stacked plates, plates set at many multiple angles, but above all, liquid crystal systems, which will give me the chance to see the multidimensional aspects of what we are talking about. Because of the time constraint given to me in the first part of this lecture, I'm consolidating matter and bringing it into a tighter time schedule. We must do this, unfortunately, at all times. So I'm trying to create first for you a mental picture of what takes place. And then you will see it on videotape, and you will see the actual plates that I have taken and I have here with me as well. The results so far are the following. I have observed on plate images which act on the silver halide grains. They will darken the silver halide and form dots, trails, and patterns. The most precise pattern I have had has been the water molecule, pure H2O. And there I get a double spiral pattern. And what is truly remarkable is that when you go back to the book by George Leadbeater and Anna Besant, Occult Chemistry, and you look at the ANU, or the atom as described by them, you will see that picture on the plate that I have taken. Now, if that is not a coming back to home. Now, what I find is that the camera generates particles of energy of varying velocity. The camera generates particles which, when they impact on the plate, have such velocity that they will not sensitize the silver halide, but form tracks. These tracks now are of multi-layer dimensions. The film that I am using at this time is a film designed for lantern slide projection. So it consists of a glass plate with a silver halide emulsion on it, gelatin, and then a top coat of gelatin as well. So it has a protective film on the top. When I carefully study these tracks with dark field ultrapack microscopy using a 42x objective, I see that that top layer has been etched with tracks. And these tracks have periodic oscillation to them. There is a periodicity according to the program that I set up in the dials and intention that I put into the machine. That periodicity is concomitant with my intention. I'm beginning now to see the geometric form of thought. Because the mind of man expresses his thought in geometric patterns. These geometric patterns are identical to what we see in the crystallographic world. The geometry of mind and the geometry of crystallography are identical. And I'm beginning to find them. I'm beginning to see the Bravais angles and the space groups that one sees in crystallography. And this I am dedicating my life to, because this is science and not illusion or imagination. And I wish at all times in this work to remain a scientist, to be focused in thought to achieving truth and not a mass of illusion. Because one can be lost in a quagmire of information which has no substance to it. But it is our intuition that guides us. It comes from a higher power to look for that, but not this. Because in that haystack are a few needles. And I'm going to now show you some of these needles. This crazy microphone. 1974, I had the opportunity to visit George Tansley at Oxford, England, and go with him to Lavender Dower and Miss Berline at Swinburne Cottage in Oxford, England. They had in their beautiful cottage, many hundreds of years old, on the third floor of the attic, the only existing Mark IV Delaware camera. They have had that camera close to 15 years and have taken hundreds of plates with the camera. However, they could only make images whenever Corte came to their cottage, loaded the plates the same as he did with George Delaware, and then they had images. They persisted for 15 years and thousands of exposures with no result except for Corte. George Delaware suffered the same experience. He suffered the ignominy of having the camera where he got magnificent plates one day and then tried to demonstrate to a group of scientists from the Royal Society and nothing but blank plates. To the end of his life, he never had an understanding or explanation of why this did not work, except to say that Corte had to load the plates. I was with Corte a few months ago, and right after I spoke to the Radionic Association in England, he has an obsessive fear of the camera. He himself cannot operate the camera. He had tried repeatedly. He told me personally that they made 2,000 exposures on the camera before they got a single plate, which with what they thought was meaningful results. 2,000 exposures. At the Delaware Laboratory is only the base cabinet, but not the top optics. I said, Corte, you can put it together. Why don't you operate it? He will not. For this reason, I now have the camera, because when I went to England, and just before I went, I read this book, New Worlds Beyond the Atom, by Langston Day. And I wrote in the book, I can operate this camera because what is required is the principle of electrophotography. Namely, you must apply a charge to the plate. And once you impute that charge, a separation of charge must take place, similar to the phenomena of an electret. And then when a photon of radiation strikes, the charge will come together and act on the silver halide. Prior to my going, I had worked with quartz crystals as a power transducer for the energies of mind. I found I could transfer charge with these devices in space, act on photographic film, but above all, act on a photomultiplier tube in space and watch the actions on a scope. So I said, it is logical then that I can take a crystal of this type, charge the plate, and we should then get images equivalent to what the Delawares have been doing. So I went to the Delawares, the Lavender Dower and Miss Berline, and we worked together with George Tansley for one whole afternoon. And here is the result that we obtained. I used the image of my heart chakra. And this is the image I got of my own heart chakra. It was a heavily exposed plate. The remarkable thing when we tried to clear the plate in the silver halide, which was exposed, it would not clear in fresh hypo. I had to reach in, lift the plate out, and expose it to the light that was going on, and then the unreacted silver cleared. When you look closely on this picture, you will see points of light. What is referred in occult teaching as the nadis, is the etheric network. The crossover points of energy fields are visible here. I did this 8 times in a row, and each time was able to repeat with an uncharged plate which was totally blank. I said, that's enough. It works. It's real. Here is the crystal. Here is a procedure that we have set up. Go ahead and do it. To my sadness, they could not do the work themselves. As a consequence, a year and a half ago, I wrote to them requesting the camera, and they have sent it to me, and I now have it in my own home. In the camera, there are many subtle but precise settings that are required. And in the second half, we will go over that. You will see it then on to videotape. You calibrate the camera with copper sulfate, CuSO4, and you get these tracks of the atomic radiation coming from a charged particle. The charging is with your mind. The energy moves out as ray patterns as it impacts at a point in space that you see here. But what the Delawares did not do, and I was truly guided to investigate, was to go within the plate itself. I was given channeling on this. I said, is this information complete? The answer was no. You must go within. And this is the way it works. So I went within with the microscope using dark field, lights, ultra-pack objectives, 42X. And now in going within the plate, a whole new world emerged, which now I share with you. Going to have to turn the lights off. Now I'm going to stand here. The glass plate is here and the scalar is given as well. And what you are looking at will be the actual, that each line division that you see is 10 microns. This is dark field, so the engraved lines are shown as double lines. Now the first plate that is shown are the tracks that we're seeing, and if you notice the systematic beat of the tracks, and it's bilateral. In other words, it has a rhythmic pulsation to it. These angles are consistent as well. Magnification here you're seeing is close to 800 diameters. You can measure that if you compare each line up there is 10 microns. Next plate. Here's another finer track. You can see the beginning and the end of a track, and that in that track there is a rhythmic bilateral pulsation, and then there is a transverse line coming from that. Another one. Now, if these don't look like atomic particles, I don't know what is. You can see the point of contact and the raying out, a longer one and a shorter one. These are the actual negatives. The prints are in the notebook here that you can look at afterwards. Next one. This is another track, but when you look closely, this one now is acted on the silver halide. So each one of these minute points that you see here are composed of dozens to hundreds of points of energy, not light, energy acting on us like a little tiny multivibrator pulsing on that plate, producing these minute points, and each one of them are precise and exact. What I am referring to is you take one small dot, and inside of that dot is a whole series of myriad arrays of points which are exact. Is that it? This is just one plate. Now here is two tracks. The track to the right is an exposed silver halide track. In other words, an energy which is photonic acting on the silver halide. The other track is highly energetic beyond that of the acting on the silver halide and is grooving the emulsion. The plate itself, I'd like to show you, from which I have taken each one of these photomicrographs. Now you can't see it because of the magnification, but these things, it takes me about a week to work up one plate like this, using a stereo microscope up to 200 diameter magnification. I examine and carefully, I have a grid eyepiece, then I go over and grid, then I start the process of marking. This plate that you looked at is a study of a quartz crystal, the healing crystal. I'm in the process now of trying to get the patterns of energy that radiate from a crystal that I'm holding here in my hand. So this is a study of the energies released from a quartz crystal. Now, we'll get another set. This one is copper sulfate. And you'll see a completely distinct difference in pattern. Watch out for the plate. I'm really taking my life in my hands to bring everything here, but I wanted you to see. Here's another track, very similar to the other one. Now watch some of the next series that you will see evolving. Very peculiar bilateral rhythmic oscillation. Next plate. They are spiral. They are swiveling. Because as I focus in optical sectioning, going to higher magnification, these are true spirals. If I take five pictures and do optical sectioning of it, I come up with a helix. These are helical structures. Some go to the right, others will go to the left. But most of these are turning to the right. Now, look at this. Here is an impact area, the point of impact, and you have two tracks coming out at right angles to one another. Look at the precision of the track and depth. The secondary tracks you can see there, and these are larger parallel tracks. They will groove in, but there I found this one track here where it impacted and it came out as a right angle burst. In the use and study of these in quantum physics, you measure these angles. I find many of these are precisely 90 degree right angles, other have differential angles to them, and I'm starting to accumulate a library of these type of angles. Next plate. Look at this one. You saw the begin, almost, yes, the beginning, and here's the end of the track. It's a corkscrew. Spinning in space, these energies are spinning in space. Here's a beautiful, this one now, again, is on the silver halide, and it has, unfortunately, those of you back there cannot see it, but it is a very precise systematic pattern. I think I have one more, which is a big track.
Could you back up a second, Marcel? On the corkscrew one, what are you positing in your mind when you're taking that one?
I set the program and I blank my mind. I become one with the machine. When I do that, Christopher, I feel a vibration. I cannot breathe. During the 1 minute exposure, I do not breathe. I am totally linked to the machine. I can do about three plates in 1 day's time.
But why would one come in spirally like the corkscrew when another's coming at right angles?
These are all types of energies that we're generating. I'm just unpeeling the cosmos.
It's a new way of doing general energetic research.
That is correct. This you're seeing for the first time, I believe no one before has encountered this. I had to go within. I had to get help from counseling, from channeling, for me to have done this. Now look at this one. Look at the systematic spiral. This is blowing up now to 2,000 diameters. That is not now with the 42X, but it's oil immersion with a 100X objective. So it's over 2,000 diameters of this small, one of these small tracks. And you can see the precise oscillation that is going on there. Yes, bring that up a bit. And my friends, it is exactly 10 o'clock. I've been asked to stop talking at 10 o'clock, and I leave you with a bunch of questions. I'll see you after the break for our coffee. Thank you very much.
Great material, man. That's wonderful.
It is. This is fine.
I'll have to see if I can get a string for that.
Could you take a tie in?
Yes.
It's so stupid to sit there and have to hold it.
I wish I did, but I don't.
In this period that we are together is give you some fundamentals that I've learned over the last 10 years of study. My training is science. And what I define science is the study of the events that happen in nature that can be repeated and then a theory attached to it that can be understood by the mind of man. We have different processes of our mind in when we deal with what we call matter, or what we see with our senses. We can receive an impression only through the senses, and that limits us to the electromagnetic spectrum. I am a microscopist. I have done now close to 23 years of work and study through the optical microscopic medium. If you dealt with your senses alone, you could never succeed in the field of optical microscopy. I have many hundreds of times captured on photographic film images that I cannot see with my physical eye. I use my physical eyesight to align the optical path within the limits of the correction mechanism set up in the microscope. I then activate my third eye, the sensor that we have between our physical eyes, and begin to scan and look for the information content that is there, the pattern, the summary of knowledge. I said knowledge because every bit of matter or energy moving in space is not random, but accretes in systematic patterns reflecting its origin. And once you can look for that, you go beyond seeing and you start feeling. You look through the object and see it in multi dimensions. And that is the core and the secret. Namely, I can see beyond a plane and get to that critical optical sectioning that brings that form into being. Now, I am sharing with you something that has taken me 20 years to learn. When I make an exposure through the microscope, I have a Zeiss Ultrafote 3B automatic camera microscope. It's about $500,000 of equipment, but still the operator must be there. I then work with the fine focus and start oscillating the fine focus up and down against an optical section that I set with my subconscious and higher mind, my intuitive mind. Now that oscillation produces a sharpness of image which transcends the normal vibration that takes place in all matter. Because as I illuminate with light, it causes that object to vibrate. No matter how steady, how much on a rock I place the microscope. But by building the vertical trajectory on a sub-micron level, I get a sharpness to image, which is remarkable. These pictures that you see here that I've shown you are the result of that. Of my going in, and some of these exposures are 1 to 2 minutes exposure. So I'm holding everything steady, no breathing, totally focused and locked in to capture that moment of event. And that is how you get them. It is now an integration of myself into the microscope. The microscope and myself become a unit instrument. I and the microscope know and love one another. There is a simpatico, a relationship that takes place. To learn Curler illumination, the critical control of the optical path, I took 2 years of work night after night, practicing till my eyes burnt and I could barely see. But at the end of 2 years, I was ready to compete in the microscopic world, and I did, against the Biological Photographers Association, and received the Charles W. Foster Award. Only when you can bring the machine up to its maximum attunement can you transcend it. You've got to bring any equipment to its point. And when you get it to its point, you move beyond the point to infinity. Then you're free. Then you explore. And we are obsessed, and I underline that word, with magnification. We've got to get an object bigger and bigger, so the only way to go is to an SEM or to finally to an electron microscope. That's not the reality. Because when you pump and put an object into an electron microscope, it is dead. The life is out of matter when you put it into an electron microscope, be it an SEM or TEM. Transmission electron microscopy, you only deal then with a replica. All matter in form has life to it. All matter in form emits a radiation. All matter in form is emitting its note, characteristic of its pattern or geometric structure, but above all, reflecting in space its reason for existence. But when you put it into vacuum and pump it down to 10 to the minus 8th or 9th, that vibration ceases and you see only a dead skeleton. Reflect on this. Think about it. We have the ability when we mature, and I'm only in a kindergarten grade at this moment with this Delaware camera, of capturing on film the geometric form and pattern of thought. We have the potential ability to truly see and measure thought holograms. Thought now can be linear, two-dimensional in form, trilinear, three-dimensional in form, and finally multi-dimension, where we move into infinity, a spiral helix. You take light, ordinary light that we have here, we polarize it with a linear polarizer. What that does, it takes the rays of energy and combs it. A linear polarizer will take the radiation, and so you get then purely a transverse oscillation going in one direction. I put another polarizer at 90 degrees and it extinguishes the radiation. The light goes out because now the transverse polarizer allows no ray to pass through it. We do a very simple but remarkable event. We put between the polarizer and analyzer what we call a quarter wave plate, a mica plate. What happens? The ray of energy is bent and starts spinning. We get then optical rotary dispersion, or circular dichroism, CD. The energy of that radiation now spins. We can have then a right-handed or left-handed spin to this radiation. In the Delaware camera is a polarizer on one of the paths. The path of the information of the object to be exemplified. It is the most difficult setting in the whole instrument of knowing exactly where to set that degree of rotation. Watch, Andrea, to start the elliptical rotation. When I don't get the setting correctly, I get to straight lines. But when I make the proper setting to the polarization of that energy, it starts spinning. I come up with a whole new form of energy. We have so much to learn from this machine. I'm going to be building in the immediate future a Delaware camera attached to a video system, so we will be able to see in video the holographic patterns of thought. That thoughts are geometric, and that in a geometric pattern of thought is information stored. Once I bring the geometry of thought and its crystallographic patterns into coincidence with the crystallography and patterns of the mineral world, we find, I am certain, these will mesh, fit, and link. It is my belief, I'm speaking now to you as an individual, that this is the computer of the future. A mind computer. The ability to store then patterns. And to read them back, we need but draw our breath. I awoke one morning, and in my mind flashed the following words. Records are written in stone. Records are written in stone. And it repeated, until I accepted the thought and then started to act on it. This is 2.5 years ago. Records are written in stone. Not on stone, but in. As I reflected on these words and started the process of study, I realized that within the lattice of a crystal is enormous space, but not empty space. That we, you and I, can occupy that space. When we occupy that space, crystal oscillates. It vibrates in harmony with our occupation of this space and then emits a note, a tone, which is synonymous with that vibration. That is the backbone, the fundamental basis of my cutting crystals for healing, for the therapeutic use of these in medical practice and in the release of traumatic conditions from the bodies of individuals. This morning I will show it to you. I am going to make a predictive statement to you. What I hold now in my hand is the radionic instrument of the future. It has all of the properties that one does with a black box. It has all of the forces that one needs in healing, and it requires only that one train one body to deal with an instrument of this way. What you require in training is breathing exercises, detachment, being loving, and not afraid to move into the future and try. Above all, the release of fear of the unknown. One day, when I was on a television program, an idea hit me, and I went
This was in New York, and tried something I'd never tried before, and I'm going to do it now for all of you. And then, as I do it, reflect on the whole philosophy and theory of radionics. These crazy microphones. In radionics, we have a rubbing plate. The function of the rubbing plate is to connect the program that we have in our mind and the object we're trying to attune to. And when we come to resonance, we get this stick, the locking of the finger to the surface. The original Delawares use a rubber dam and the finger sticks. The later systems use hard micarta plates. The ultimate rubbing plate is a crystal. Because I can put the entire program of whatever I want, instead of twisting a series of dials, I take a deep breath, put my intention between my fingers, and now I have the primary oscillation I can attune to. Now, I'm going to link to my own body to this by taking a deep breath. And as I release my breath, crystal links. I am linked now through breath into the crystal. Put my finger on, I cannot move. It's totally locked. Now, to release, watch. I draw the breath in. And then suddenly let's go. Let the breath out again. The intention I had was linking. Simple program. Now, to attach to you. Focus on you. And as I draw my breath in, release the breath. Now I'm linked. And you can feel a vibration being propagated to you. The field is coherent. Between my left fingers is a vibratory radiation going on. Describe your sensation, Doctor, now.
I feel like I'm in a cocoon of very soft vibrations.
Right. Now watch when I draw my breath out. Gone. The field spirals. The end of this crystal releases a spiral of energy in one direction. The reverse direction has been cut by me in this. One side is positive, the other side is negative. I am making now a grouping of about 25 crystals for the Radionic Association in England. I go there in October and will be teaching their people to use these crystals in radionics. The primary thing that I will be sharing with them, that this becomes a precise antenna that they can direct the radiation to and reduce at a quantum jump the time of treatment from days to minutes. There is no reason or need for the length of time of treatment. Because once the thought form is released and injected, no further treatment need to be given. Thank you very much. Yes.
This is natural
quartz crystal from Arkansas. And in the second half, I will be going into healing with the crystal, but applying all of the principles I've spoken to you about. Yes?
Hasn't that been polished?
I have made this myself. I've cut this from a natural six-sided crystal. This is now four-sided. I attune a crystal like this for the resonant frequencies of my body. I balance it so that it is a total reflection of myself. It's a precise radionic instrument. Yes, because in a natural crystal is stored the entire pattern of the history of its growth. I have to cut away the eons of time that it has taken to grow, to bring it into a new form, give it new life.
How do you wipe out the food?
By cutting it.
Physical vibration.
Physical vibration of cutting it shatters the fields. Like natural crystal, I cut it, and the varying pressure I put on it, I go into battle with the crystal. Physical battle. Using a 75 grit diamond flat lap. And as soon as the crystal has given up, the tone changes. There's a difference in tone. And then the crystal starts to polish and cut freely. But in the first stages, there's a growl, there's a noise. It is a battle, yes.
Would each of us individually have to do our own crystal?
No, I cut the crystals for you. I can do that. I get the tone for you. I pick it up from your signature or your intention. Because once you broadcast what you want to do, that becomes then available, and then I draw on that. Yes?
How do you make the crystals that are cut
for I can't hear you.
How do you make the crystals which are cut for
new intentions and more resonant centers? Well, you set up a frequency of your own body vibration. It becomes insular and only available to you. It will do that, but that does not bother you. Because you're in a vibrating frequency far beyond that of the electro... I don't know yet. It's still a mystery to me. I've had to reverse the process of scientific application. I've had to start from intuition, doing, making, and now I'm trying to learn what I have done. True, yes. Very simply, if you're in the with me, I have you, I demagnetize the crystal first with either a demagnetizing electromagnet, get its basic rate with the radionic equipment, then you hold the crystal, and then I get the difference of it, and that's your rate. Then I cut the crystal to fit that, and it fits exactly. And this is the original shape I got from the Kabbalah, the study of the Kabbalah that one sees in, reads of, the tree of life. One sees this form in that when you see it. You had a question?
Yes, once this is cut to your rate, does it fall and change as your rate changes?
At times, yes, where you make variations in your life. I've had to cut 2 and 3 times, reface the tip for the doctors I'm working with. I'm working with about 20 medical doctors in San Jose and San Francisco and Sacramento. These are surgeons, orthopedists, obstetrics, gynecology. We're finding, as you saw in the article, those of you who have read it, Dr. Lasko has gotten extremely good results with herpes in removing of the symptoms of itching, the pain, with just a single application with the crystal. The article I'm referring to was in the Radionics Review from England. Now, let us carry on. As the atom is a unit of matter and expresses itself in a physical form, we have in the pre-physical state of being an energy we can call a vitality globule. These assemble together to form the units of life energy forms. They are geometric and crystalline in their shape and form. They form into dot patterns, points of energy or points of light. They can add together into dot arrays. They form lines, or they can assemble in circles, squares, rectangles, triangles. They assemble in space according to sound. which accelerates these globules until they link together and form three-dimensional patterns. The resultant form, then, of these one-dimensional shapes to three-dimensional forms evolves crystallographic patterns. These structures then begin to hold information because they have then the ability to oscillate in many directions to hold information by the change in their pattern and form. An idea is two-dimensional geometry. A thought form is three-dimensional geometry. These three three-dimensional forms and patterns, the mind enlivens with a vibration. The soul is light. Light and sound are synonymous. Ergo, the act of enlivening is to put life or pulsation or rhythmic vibration into this form. Much the same as what takes place when I take a deep breath, focus on the crystal, and pulse. The crystal vibrates. A vibrant life energy ensues. Yes?
Is this energy coherent?
I think it is coherent. Because it is linear, it is point-like, and it is little tiny, much the same as one sees in the speckle that one sees in a laser. See these little points of light and the speckling action. I see the same thing in these type of points, and these are tracks that come from it, but they repeat. Now, this is the research, is to find these patterns. To find the conditions to measure these patterns which exemplify the life principle that matter has when thought imbues in it. Matter and energy are interconvertible, but it is not the complete aspect of the Einstein equation. What is missing is the preform, the pattern of thought that holds matter in its form. And that, my friends, is what I'm after. I've been led to this in the early stages with the study of man-plant communication. I used a simple life form, a philodendron, as an indicator of the energies of mind. I will show you now a series of foils that are exceedingly interesting. These were done many, many years ago, 1971 and 72. Let's put this one up. Now, these exemplify much of what I am talking about the best way I can describe it. In here now, we have on the upper track the 60-cycle hum of the equipment. What you are seeing is a output from a Wheatstone bridge in which the two electrodes are connected to a leaf of a plant, a philodendron, split leaf philodendron. Yes? Oh. Pardon? There it is. That's good. But no, bring it up down there first. Bring it down. Leave it up on top there. That's good. All right. Now, up on top there, that's my 60-cycle hum. Now, when I take a deep breath, draw my breath in, you will see a change in resistance. I'm 15 feet away from the plant. I'm not connected to the plant. I'm just focusing on the plant. I hold my breath, and then I release the breath. Each small horizontal division is 1/2 millivolt. So the horizontal division is 1/2 millivolt per small division. These are hefty signals. I then repeat the breathing process, keep on the second, third, fourth time, and suddenly there is a saturation in which now the deep breathing produce no further effect. There is an equilibrium that takes place. This shows a charge transfer mechanism taking place between my body and the leaf of a plant. From these breathing experiments, I went then to working with a crystal. We put this one on, in which now I held a crystal healing device first in my right hand and then in my left hand. The top part is the balancing of energy, charging of the plant with breath that you saw before, and suddenly you see that I come into equilibrium and no further change. In other words, my field and the plant's field now become one. A synchronicity of vibration between the plant and myself. So any small change now is manifest and recorded. We come now and lift it up to the bottom track. I'm now going to pump energy, crystal like this, rotate, focus, and then oscillate. And now you see the results. Left hand, you see spiking taking place, which is identical to action potential stimulation that one sees in electrostimulation of nerve endings. You see this spiking taking place. Here you see it here with just taking a crystal and just doing this to the plant. I go now to the right hand and look at the difference in frequency. More than a doubling of the rate of vibration. The remarkable thing is this diagram that you see to the right, this vibratory oscillation takes place each time the act of healing is done on a patient. When I focus on a patient or an individual I wish to serve or be of assistance to, these type of rhythmic vibratory oscillations take place. There is a energy transfer which is rhythmic, pulsing, and works in time up to at times 5 minutes. And then abruptly will shut off. There was a saturation. So the energy one uses in healing can be observed and measured with a simple instrument like a plant. The source of energy comes from amplifying the field with the crystal. One can go deeper now. So I've done in this one where I used a narco physiograph equipment and did multiple imaging. This experiment was done with Dr. Lee Sinella, a projection of a thought form from my home in San Jose to Berkeley, California. Yes? Pardon me?
The previous two pictures, we're looking at millivolt outputs from
the plant. Right.
Is that a galvanic skin response?
GSR, galvanic skin response, yes. Now, this is a multi-track system, a GSR, a narco equipment. So I had here the blood plethysmograph of myself. The GSR on the plant is the second one. The third one is on myself, and the blow is the timing in seconds. And so I was at 9:15 and a half, where you have the red blue mark, and each one of those lines were 1 second. Within a few seconds, when I released this thought form of a Star of David, Dr. Lee Sinella recorded the same identical image in Berkeley. There were seven other people that he was with. So as within, it's the closest I know to exact timing of a mental thought. The amplification of these signals that you see here were done by me with a crystal held in my hand. I were using crystals as an amplifier of the field. Hold breath, just hold the crystal quietly, project the thought, and now you see the signal as it was released. There is the image release, exact coincidence with the plant, myself, and the response in my blood physiology. I don't know of another graph showing the coincidence of physiological changes when you release a pattern of thought. Now, let's move to the next thing. Does a thought form exist in time? And this is the exciting thing. When you create a thought, there is now brought into being time. And the best way I can see this is the following. Here is a pattern that was taken many, many years ago now with Dr. Dorfman, a nuclear physicist, in which he sat in my living room. I tuned mentally into him, locked onto the plant, and now had him think of his wife. And you see then the bottom small burst, and you have then for 104 seconds the pattern of thought of Dr. Dorfman thinking of his wife. I asked him to do this again the second time, and here, this is the third pattern, this is the first one, the second, and now if you can bear with me, I will overlay these here. I left the other one home. Yep. It's two, and there's three. Well, you got three. Okay, overlay the two of them. Show them top and bottom and then overlay them. I thought I had left them. That's two, and then three. Now look at the coincidence. That's two events happening subsequent to each other, a thought form being released in space. And look at the overlay of data. Lift one off and lay it down again. I mean, those of you who have done analysis of images, you can realize there is no coincidence to this. These are repetition of patterns. The unfortunate thing is that Dr. Dorfman did not want to accept this and threatened to sue me if I were ever to publish this data. But he did this with me. Pardon? Yes, push them apart from each other. Within 1 second of each other, of the same, all the patterns fit. There was more detail in one against the other. Number two, point out to number two, is that is number two, and number three is right below it, there. You see there's more detail appearing now, because he's working out more in his mind. But they overlay on each other. Now the ultimate pattern, I don't know whether I'll ever do this again, he worked at the linear accelerator, SLAC, and I asked him to go with his mind to the linear accelerator and carry on in the experimentation. And here is his mind moving to the linear accelerator. And now you can see a pattern of about 140 some odd seconds duration. What was exciting in that series, I asked him to repeat part of his experimentation. He did that. And when we overlaid those graphs on parts of the experimentation, bits and pieces of this fitted together. Here's a pattern descriptor here on a graph of an entire mind experiment. So we do radiate in space these patterns of energy. I have found that it is not limited by time or space. One can do it in a room, or one can do it 8,000 miles away and do the same thing.
Let me clarify. You were sort of at one with him, and then you were projecting
the plan. I have to link to you. I become a shield. I remove all secondary interference so I can get a clear signal. Otherwise, you would have a signal like this with a mass of noise. Other people who have done the plant experimentation, I've tried time and again to tell them this. You are integrally part of the experiment. If you don't do that, you're going to get this signal superimposed on among a lot of noise. You have to do then a Fourier transform to pull out this signal. I did the Fourier transform. I cleaned up the signal to get a pure pattern, and there you see the result. Purely by intention. The intention was, I want to get a clear signal of your thought of the experiment, and out it comes. It's not very complicated. Now, pardon me? Oh yes, I did it for about 2 hours. Bits and pieces. I have a whole string of charts on that.
How many repetitions?
About 6 or 7 or more. And this was a total experiment, and then I did parts of it. I would get this part repeated, or this, or this. So in a sense, there was a complete code of the pattern of thought here. Now, my friends, take a look at this, and look over the blackboard here on the Delaware camera. You see the similarity, oscillations and tracks like that. I'm trying now to take this, which was done in 1971 into 1983 with a camera, capture these patterns of thought and bring them into physical form that we can study as doctors, scientists, physiologists, because we permeate space with thought. We inject our mind into everything we do. And we must learn to be prudent of how we act and the way we think. Now, our mind, no more, your mind, mine, release a coherent vibration composed of a fundamental tone, which is your body vibration. Modulation of this tone is the FM modulation of this carrier wave with the information data. And through this means we move matter and bring this information into form. Man is made to the image and likeness of God. In the beginning was the Word, and through the Word, matter came into being. We are capable of creation. Once we use our minds intelligently for the good and service of one another, and not for destruction and terror, we are just at the infancy of seeing these wonderful potentials of growth and development. Now, I could go deeper. It's unfortunate that, see, these are small fragments of 8-hour lectures that I give to the doctors and the technical profession of men that I'm working with. Let us now take a break and look at the videotape of the camera. You will see now the interior of the camera, its structure. The first thing now you will see will be a homemade videotape on the monitor here of the Delaware camera as it is now in our home. Can we put it on? Is there any questions while he's setting this up? Yeah, you want to? No questions?
Are you familiar with the FUKB statements about this sort of thing?
No, what did he say?
Well, in the first place, he said that he spoke about crystals, and particularly quartz crystals, as receivers and amplifiers of power.
That's right, I agree.
And, this was 60 years ago.
Right, isn't that beautiful? Watch. Let's do an experiment while he's setting it up. Put your hands up. Take a deep breath. Hold your breath and slowly let your breath out now. And I will start pumping to all of you. Now, you're going to start feeling it, and you'll feel your body start to oscillate and vibrate. I want to give the fundamental tone that I'm working with in all healing process. Here she goes. Watch. Now I'm going to make your body sway. Feel the oscillation? Now, let your breath out and let us link all of our breaths together as we draw it in. Become one with the source and then slowly let your breath out again. Peace be to all of you. Put your hands down. How many could feel the energy? You see?
When you were raising and lowering hands, I even opened my eyes to see.
I had my eyes closed, so I wasn't looking.
But I wanted to check to see whether I was feeling.
That's right.
What I was feeling was corresponding with whether you were moving your arms up and down.
One little crystal.
Correct.
It works. I've done this with about 1,000 people. The interesting thing, I've done it, my friends, cross-country. Here to New York, have them hold a hand up, and I pulse, and I said, now count the beat. And they will count, and they get exactly the same beat as I get. Go ahead.
Last thing Casey said was, desire is the trigger, and mind is the creator.
That is correct. Mind is the creator. And once we let our mind grow, evolve, and develop, we become one with the source. And then we are free. Yes, dear. Yes, I have his book. It's right on. Because I'm alluding to this. Because what we do in space with mind is build these geometric forms. What did I do in the last moment? If you had watched my hands, I was building a geodesic dome linking all of us into one mind to be of service. Yes.
Excuse me. You know the
Yeah, I cut it down to four sides. And the reasoning for that is that the symmetry of our body is best fitted into a four-sided space. As we evolve, as you grow, we go into a hexagonal space. We move from this to this. These are the two crystals I work with. Four-sided to six-sided. This is a whammer, or a zonker, if you want to call it. With this, you can really pump. The beauty is, you do no harm. You only serve and you help. When we finish this, I will do healing. Would you like to see me do some healing and help of people? You're number one, I know. All right, let's turn on the video and let's watch. What?
Can you
Can we turn the lights down? Wow. Turn it up.
The camera consists of a large box with two parts, the upper part and the lower part. The lower part contains most of the adjustments that are made, and the upper part is the channel where the programming plate is exposed.
Can everybody see it all right?
Let me show you the different sides of it. This side is normally placed on the north, and the adjustments for that are a set of 12 dials, similar to any other normally placed on the east, the second set.
You're actually seeing the camera. There it is.
On the south side is a special dial. We call the spiral coil dial. The other side is wired. On the top of the camera, for each side, are two crawl plates. And let the knobs turn. And this controls the magnet, which is placed along this axis just below this plate. There's three of those. They're identical on the three sides. The upper chamber is where the photographic plate is exposed. The plates are loaded in an ordinary plate holder. Except the plate holder has a plastic liner which supports the glass plates out of contact with anything else. Plates are loaded, they're charged, and inserted into the camera in this fashion. When you're ready for exposure, of course, pull it in the dark slide. Expose the camera. Exposing the camera consists of turning on vibrators that are located inside. Before that happens, each of these various dials has to be set.
So, welcome. The other half would be us. The tuning of these dials is done with a rubbing plate. This is the Delavar rubbing plate, which is a piece of copper below here attached through this electrode to a very thin piece of rubber dam material. And when you stroke it, when you get a stick, the butt of your finger grabs and you hear it like a clicking sound. The plate, rubbing plate, is inserted in here. And now you can tune for the various weights. In this case here, I will tune, this side is attuned for the individual that one is working with. In case right now of myself, I will take a bit of skin, put it here, and or a bit of hair, I will pull it here, put it here. In some cases, a drop of blood is used. I use either the right or the left hand. Rub all dials of turning counterclockwise. Here, so we're all the way over to now, you find the rate for myself. These in our notebook. We have
sheet where we put the beta M for each one of the positions that we have. Here's one experiment that we were dealing with in the study of my heart chakra. Here are the values that we got for this area.
Take my slot if you want it.
70, 7.0, 6.5, 6.8. And these were all zeros.
It's this one. Okay.
This sets the primary or vibration for the witness or the individual working with it. Another form of rubbing plate that we use is this one here. This one is developed by Daniel Perkins in Las Vegas, Nevada. It consists of a spiral coil epoxied in place. Wires come out into the box and come into the connectors that you see here. I use one leg of the coil for the rubbing plate and do this. I find this very convenient. When you point to this dial, stick, smooth, immediately stick, this one, stick. What is valuable about this system is that when I take the dial and place two of my fingers on it and move the point where it is at its maximum back and forth, I feel an induced charge in my fingers. This is at the maximum here now. So each one of these are tuned. The next step that one does, using this now as a rubbing plate, is to rotate the magnet on an axial direction until the field is attuned for this vibration into the reflector that we will show you briefly. Now it's at its maximum. Even on this smooth plate, I cannot move now my finger. To read this direction off in degrees here and duplicate that on each one of the other magnetic dials. It is a bar magnet set at a critical angle. The principle, we believe, is that now the field that is generated is passed via the magnet into the reflecting parabolic mirrors that are in the upper camera case. The next setting is to set them the rate for which we wish to get a picture or a image of. The second half we are shooting here now is for the heart chakra. The rate we have for the heart chakra is 68, 5.5, 7.5, and 8.0. These were set in exactly the same way on these dials. The third setting is the setting of the spiral. And that is here. The spiral is a seven-turn spiral. You bring this back till the cursor is all the way back, and then you can use this position for determining now number of turns
body starts to vibrate. Stick in. Not as heavily exposed, but they still show evidence of silver Pele developed. The type of pipe we are using for this work here is an Eastman Kodak slide plate, catalog number 6917. The plate is loaded in complete darkness in a holder, as you see here. We locate the emulsion side according to the code that they place on the holders. There's special trays that these things are held in. And then we will, presently, we mark on the edge of the plate with a number, a serial number, so we are precisely knowledgeable of where the emulsion is and is facing the camera side. Pipe is closed, as you see here, and then charged with a crystal columnar pyramid form that we have made, held over the crystal. Crystal is held rather over the plate, rotated until I feel the vibration pulse, and held until I get the feedback in the crystal itself. There is starting to come. There is now the feedback. My body starts to perspire, and now the plate is charged. This is how the plate is charged. Plate then is taken.
Now listen to the sound.
You have a convention of 1 minute exposure, and we have been consistent in that. What the exact time is, we're not yet certain, but we have gotten results with this, and we stay with that form of exposure. Exposure time is finished. It's taken out and then developed in the stranded Bechdel developer. Following the instructions of Eastman Kodak. For the picture and the developing liquid is the standard Eastman Kodak D72 or Dectal.
It's done in complete darkness. There's no safe light.
Then we examine for results. See the shadow on the back there. Can you see that?
Yeah.
What I'm holding in my hand now is plate number 207, taken by the Miss Berline and George Corte. Corte, when he loaded the plates in Oxford, England, and worked with Miss Berline, were able to get these images that you see here. The Berlines could not get images by themselves. They've tried repeatedly for over 10 to 15 years. And they, at my request, have sent this camera to me now to work with. The sound that the camera produces is given by the master switch, and if you listen carefully now, you'll hear the...
Now listen carefully.
...generated by the audio oscillators. There are three, one in each compartment here, which together produce a composite tone. This tone is controlled by the
wires that are connected to each one of these dials, and they must be stretched. So they're like a violin string that is tuned to a certain resonance. There is a transformation of sound into the another form of radiation which goes into this area. That sound transformation then is projected to the reflectors that are inside the cavity that we will see in a moment. There is no connections here. These are purely pedestals which hold the camera body. There is no light. The only element of action is this sound that you are hearing now. The next part of this will be to see the interior of the camera box. This will be done now by my friend, and he will demonstrate this now to
the inside of the camera head itself. Or you move the knob that controls the polarizer adjustment, and the door opens. It will be inside. First thing you can see is that there are three separate optical arrangements in there. Each one is pointed at the corresponding set of adjustment dials on the sides. Consists of a metal bar which holds a reflector and a lens. The second one is also a reflector and a lens. Over here, there's a third element added, and that's a polarizing lens, polarizing filter, which is adjusted by this mechanical means. The lens and mirror combinations work as what's called a cast iron reflector. Any light that would come from this direction would come up here and be reflected right back where it came from, in the same direction. And each of those is pointed with its axis at the center of the belt, which is underneath. Maybe you can see where I am. I don't know where I am. We're talking about the lost. I'll place the finger, right, I'm sorry, place the pencil to the area that's center of the film. And this axis extended upwards coincides with where we have placed a pyramid shaped crystal on top of the camera. The section of the polarizer is connected with the spiral dial. If you extend the axis of this optical system now to the lens, through the film plane, it intersects the axis of the spiral, pretty much on its axis, right below the magnet. So the geometry of the camera is seems to be a very important part of the arrangement.
Okay. 2 points. I'd like to go some foils now on rates, and I'll show them to you here. I finally got a little extension on my...
I have any videotape of the interior of the bottom compartment?
Yes, I have. I have it along with me. I've held nothing back. You see the whole works. This is really the first time ever that this is being shown anywhere. Now here's a cross-section of what you saw. You have an audio vibrator. I'm talking one component. A set of control dials. And what these are rods, tuning rods, like tuning forks of varying lengths. Each one of these dials is connected to a rod, and these all come to a point, and this goes to the magnet. And the equipment we had, of course, was English. It was 220-volt, 50-cycle. We had a step-up transformer that we operated. The portable detector plugs into this, and that is connected to the magnet. The angle that this has is 45 degrees. You put your witness on the plate, In this case, it's copper sulfate. You go through a polarizer, the lens, reflector, and onto the image in the plate. Some of Delaware's original concepts, these are not mine, his conceptual thinking is that the magnet creates a spiral energy instead of the paths that we have. And so when you feed in with sound a certain vibration, it is spun through the magnetic bar magnet and comes out in a reverse spiral. So it comes in one direction and out in the opposite direction. So we go in this way, we come out in another direction. So it's like a push-pull circuit. He puts the word hypothetical because we speak of the flux lines, we have observed them. I have measured them again and again with ferrofluid, with very fine magnetic material. I'm going to share with you something that is new, and it's very interesting. One, when you take a super paramagnetic magnetic material and put that on a cover glass and put a magnetic material below it, and you have then this super paramagnetic material in water, you do not get flux lines, but you have these little tiny sub-microscopic particles spinning. They spin and they form units of energy spinning, and they form that pattern that we see as a flux line. But when you deal with super paramagnetic material, they do not add on to each other, but they remain discrete. And they form particulate space, spinning spaces in air. Go ahead, or water.
In water.
In water. You can all get this. It's ferrofluid. They're ferrofluidic corporation. I don't remember the exact location now, but you can buy it in water. You dilute it about one part in 20. You use water immersion objectives, and you can see then the magnetic fields in an entirely different way than you see them with ferromagnetic materials like iron filings. Because what you do, you magnetize an iron filing and they go head to tail, and they form what we call flux lines. But I don't believe this is real. I believe we have much more information in these magnetic fields than what we are seeing right now. Here is a dial setting for example, silver nitrate. You get this, silver alone, nitrogen, oxygen, hydrogen. I've tried these dial settings and they work. They are real. It's amazing how accurate this wonderful man was. Now, here he used two components. He used one of the witness area and then the spiral vibrator that you saw. And that links it to the basic earth. The angles are such that you go through the reflectors and then onto the plate holder. I had the point of axis should be right here. The type of images that he got with just this prototype camera. Mine has three of these now, like you saw, is images of this type of copper sulfate, ray tracks, tap water. Now, the images I've gotten for tap water are atomic. In other words, a series of spirals, involute spirals. I have the pattern in my notebook. We have much more to cover, but I'm going to forego any further information on the camera unless you want to ask some questions, and give you between now and for the next 5 to 10 minutes a short descriptor on the use of crystals in healing, because this has been the basic thrust and emphasis I have done now in the use of a crystal. You want to come? The best way to talk is to do. The best way we can learn is to experience. What I shared with you before, remember, I projected with the crystal. You could feel an energy. Once you can pump through the crystal a field, you can now remove programs that are attached to our body. What I found, and what I'm teaching and passing on, is when we suffer an injury, when we have a whiplash, when we have impacted our body with a severe damage, that area of our body imprints independent of our brain. That information of injury is stored and held in the bone and tissue. And, my friends, in the most remarkable way, it is also held in the x-rays. In other words, when I take an x-ray of a person who has had a bone injury or cancer, I can detect that in the x-ray by the variation in energy that I can use with a crystal like this. Now, once you detect, you can erase. What I will be doing now is to erase programs that are on this wonderful man here that he has hurt himself. Tell us some of the things that you've hurt yourself with.
I've got a pulled muscle in my knee. I have partially occluded vision in this eye, both from traumatic injury and stuff, the kind of work I do.
What type of work do you do?
I do air conditioning contracting.
That's tough. Now, what would you like to have me do to you?
I'd like to get this here tendon so I can do a little faster moving.
Does it hurt now?
Yeah.
Where?
It aches a little bit. It's right down here.
You'd like to clear it up?
I sure would.
Totally?
Absolutely. No partial work accepted.
These are not idle statements. Do you want to be healed?
Oh, definitely.
Yes, fine. First step, does the person want to be healed? So, and it's amazing the number of times that people have stopped and had to think.
I can tell you why this injury occurred. I wanted to quit working.
Ha! Isn't he wonderful?
I was now turning it over to my son, and I kneeling down on a hot roof, and I deliberately kneeled there for about 15 to 20 minutes on a 140-degree surface.
You got
and ignored it. So I cooked the tendon. When I got up, I moved too suddenly, and it snapped.
Yep, you stretched it. Now, it's still holding that program.
Yeah,
now
I'm
let's
getting rid of it.
Now, we will work on that area and see if we can take it out. Now, the first thing that I have to do, if you notice, he made a remark. He wanted to retire. So psychologically or psychically, you set your body up.
I did. I didn't realize until after it did, it happened.
So now we have to take that out first. Now, when you do that, you work in what is called the witness area. I go into the etheric body by going in counterclockwise. Get your hands separated. Oh. He's locking himself with his hands. And I'm penetrating the etheric body, and I wait until a field builds up, which I feel with my left hand. Draw my breath in. Now start to pump. And tell me when you begin to feel a vibration.
I felt that immediately.
There it goes. But feel, tell me when it's at maximum. I'm changing the angle. There it is there. Now, making and breaking the circuit. Moving the crystal up and down. There it is. Now, at maximum field intensity, which I feel with my left hand. Now, breathe in deeply. Go into your heart region. Now, go circular. Now, look at the reason you set your body up. Face it. Release. Let your breath out. Alone and realize that when you are honest and say, I don't know, but I want to truly understand what this is, information is forthcoming to you. And the way it comes through is the following. You'll wake up in the morning, and in the process of transition from sleep to wakefulness, you will hear voices. Because in that transition from what has been called hyperspace to attaching ourselves back to a time frame, those who love us and wish to work with us can direct voice communicate to us. So what you're hearing is direct voice communication, DVP. And too often we hear these words or messages and we put them aside as being something frivolous. Please don't. When I go to bed and when I prepare myself for sleep, I pose a question during the process of transition from the state of wakefulness to sleep to prepare myself in the moving out of my body. I prepared last night by meditation and prayer that I would be directed and guided to give you the proper information that would be of maximum usefulness to you. Not my will, but thine. I believed in and have practiced the fact of lifting my mind and heart in prayer all of my life, from the age of 6 on. I am Roman Catholic. I love my faith. It's an integral part of my entire being and living system. I have practiced my faith in trying to love my fellow man and serve them in a right and meaningful way. The power of prayer is to bring you into a state of active union with those minds who wish to commune with you. Prayer burns away time. Prayer brings you to a state of union, communion with those who love us and are around us. Because as you move with your mind into these higher dimensions, there is no time. It is now. It always will be. There is no time. We create time with our breath. The interesting thing, if people will take more time now and study breath, become practical. Instead of going to a lot of mathematics, study yourself. If you want to grow, you want to gain the power necessary to do any of these things, learn to breathe deeply and breathe well. Breathe in harmony within yourself. And as a man breathes deeply, or a woman, there's a sense of tranquility and calmness that permeates throughout their body. The food that you generate with breath is the food of love. The food that you generate with the deep breathing burns away illusion and opens the mind to the knowledge of truth. The practice of pranayama, the withholding of breath, starts the vibration going within your body so that you link to the cosmos. One breath, I hold my breath, and as I hold my breath, I can then just pulse the breath as you see, and I move out of body at will. Nothing mysterious, nothing magical. You just do. But you do it lovingly. You don't do astral travel. You can be wherever you wish, and you can see and serve. I have absolutely no desire for power, for position, or for money. I take the monies that you've given me, they go it into a bank. I buy equipment, microscopes, microbalances, and the like, into psychic research. I've earned every penny of that. This is not part of my family, but it will be given to mankind as a whole to have for young people to come and work and research, to probe the unknown, not with words, but with the tools of science, with the tools that we can truly move into the future. Right here, my friends, is the next stages of science. We have, from my early lifetime, made such categorical statements that the soul is immeasurable. We will never know the reality of man's soul. I predict that before I transcend, it will be the most measurable, knowledgeable part of us. And I give to you this reason, because it is the most concrete reality we have, our consciousness. This is an illusion, this body. We've been obsessed with looking at it, trying to measure it, and trying to come to the minutiae of observation that we have done. But how much scientific work have we done on the soul? Some people have measured the body in transition. They have taken a person in the act of dying, put them on a balance, and weighed them. And at the moment of clinical death, there is an appreciable loss of weight. It's abrupt, immediate transition. One moment there and the moment of transition, a weight loss. Now you can argue that it is a fluid that has been released, but I had the joy of assisting at the age of 15 in my father's transition. I held his hand and told my father that I loved him and I would continue to serve him after he had passed on from his body. Father, I love you. I give you my body to help you in your transition. And then I felt my father's body relaxing. And suddenly it became quiet. And then a light, a luminous light, came through the window and bathed his entire body. That light then consolidated at the solar plexus into a ball and just moved on. And when that took place, it was the most beautiful, relaxed transition you could imagine. I felt my father's presence for about 22 to 25 years. I would feel it as a vibration, a note. You feel it in the back of your head. When I completed a scientific paper with Dr. Ralph Benson on vulvar fluorescence and dedicated that paper to my father, his presence left me. Because my father had worked on a metric system of identifying color. It was his obsession, if you wanted. He had practically no education, less than the seventh grade, all self-taught. Brilliant mind, but a small body. But when I dedicated that to him, his soul was free now to move on. We will in the very near future, be able to communicate more profoundly with the souls of those who have passed on, as we are now doing EVP, electronic voice communication, EVC. My intention is to transcend the Delaware instrumentation into a video system for direct communication with those who have passed on, so we will again be able to have two-way conversation with them. I feel it is totally reasonable. The basic designs I have in my notebook, when the time allows, I will start. I will do it not for any exploitive point of view, but to serve those minds who have had ideas that they could not complete in their lifetime. And when we can serve here with our mind, body, and spirit, it does make possible their not having to return. So the need for reincarnation could be satisfied by our serving those incomplete thought forms and helping them in their transition and development. This may sound far out, but if we are courageous, if we work as a team, we can do it. I'd like now to have my friend Kamat and talk to you on the project that she is working on, Roseanne Bassanet. She is a bundle of fire. She has two wonderful sons, and she has gone through much struggle trying to bring her project into being. I've given her all the support I possibly can. Now, Roseanne, you want to say a few words?
Sure.
Good. Microphone is yours. Let's give her a big hand. Incidentally, Roseanne has her healing crystal too. She might speak to you about that.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Can you all hear me?
Up a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. Let's put this on. Can you all see her?
I've been known to do that. Now can you hear me? It's going to take me a few minutes here. There we go. Now can you all hear me? No? I can hold it?
Yeah.
All right. How's that? Can you hear me now? I have a soft voice, so just raise your hand if you can't hear me. That would be the best way, I think. My name is Roseanne Bassanet. I come from Nevada City, California. I've been working with Marcel for a year and a half. I'm doing a doctoral dissertation on crystals. My PhD is in clinical psychology. I'm not a scientist, and this has been a real blessing to be able to mix with scientific minds, because I don't tend to think in those terms. So it's nice to have that input. I've worked with crystals in many, many different ways, and I have a request at the end of my few minutes of speaking, but I would like to share with you the kind of work that I've been doing. I've used crystals in my therapy work. I did an internship in a county mental health center, and I was blessed to be able to use my crystals for about 8 months. So I worked with clinically very psychotic patients with crystals. The staff was very open and very wonderful, so I felt that crystals would basically hasten their recovery. And what I found was that crystals not only hastened it stabilized their energy field so quickly that they did not return to the psychotic behavior. We moved through phases. It was almost like reading a psychology text. people would move through a certain phase of their own psychological development or even emotional development and childhood development, and they would stabilize at each place. They would not regress back to their psychotic behavior. And so we basically moved. And I really didn't know much about crystals at the time. It was all experimentation and the willingness to just play with it, because I understood it from an energetic perspective, because I've been a meditator for quite a while. So I could, at first I didn't feel always the things that were happening with the crystal, but I saw a change in them from the beginning of the session until the end of the session. So I knew that something was happening in that process. But in the last year and a half, the sensitivity that I've gained working with crystals has increased dramatically, so that basically I can see now thoughts moving in space. It's been rather fun to begin. As you work with crystals more, your sensitivities become more and more increased. And so I've been using them a little bit differently than Marcel does. Similar techniques, but I also do laying on of hands with people. So the techniques I use, sometimes I just hold the crystal and I use my hand more than Marcel does, and it's because I have, you know, things available, equipment available to me, and I can lay people out and work with them more. My recent experience, which I have to share because it's so much fun, 2 days ago, before coming here, rushing here, I'm in the process of moving, and the couple that I live with, the lady delivered, was in labor at our house. It was a home birth. And so I was blessed to be part of that delivery with this lady. And so I brought my crystal. I wanted to see what would happen. I've never really worked with a pregnant woman before with crystal. So I used my crystal in the session, and it really was dramatically different. But everyone in the room that worked with this delivery was also a meditator. And so they were able to focus thought much more easily than some people. And what we found was that when we moved into tense places, there was a point at which the baby, we didn't know at the time, it was a 9-pound baby, didn't know if it would be able to come out easily. And we would take turns going into meditation and prayer, and things would just naturally shift. The energy in the room would shift. When she first came up into my room and said she was going into labor, the energy in the house was tremendous. It's very much like the death process. There's a dramatic shift in the energy field around the body that's either incarnating or leaving, and your awareness is very heightened. And anybody who's there gets drawn into it. It's almost like this suction cup, and if you're open to it, you just get pulled right in. And it's not a negative feeling at all, unless you have any unresolved places in oneself. Then it brings up all the unresolved things. But generally, it's a very uplifting experience if you can flow with the changes. So what I did basically was use the crystal to amplify energy, and when someone would get tired, I would stick my hand on their spine and just channel energy to their spine. And I sometimes, just to see what they would do, I wouldn't tell them that I had the crystal in my hand, and someone would remark, "Oh, Roseanne's got her hand on my back. She must have her crystal in her hand." So it was wonderful to be able to use the crystal in many different ways. It's been a lot of fun to do that. Now my project is in the psychological realm. So what I'm trying to do is quantify something that's rather difficult to quantify. The title of the experiment is "The Effect of Wearing a Quartz Crystal on Measures of Stress Tolerance in Individuals." It's very difficult to kind of take this thing that's out in the ether and bring it down into pinpointing it into one particular quality that you want to measure. So I decided that I wanted to take anxiety and look at that with individuals. The thing that I'm having difficulty with in the experiment is that I need an instrument, basically, that can measure more subtle energies. I'm going to be using a galvanic skin response, but I found that just by going into a meditative state, I affect the machine. And my population for the study are all meditators. And so basically, I need some type of instrument that can tap into that energy shift, because I could affect the machine with my mind whether I held a crystal or not. And so, but when I held the crystal, there was a shift inside. I could feel an energy pattern that was shifting, yet the GSR didn't necessarily pick it up immediately. And so I needed an extra instrument to measure those shifts. So that's basically my plea. I have about a month left before the study goes, and I'm hoping at this conference to actually find a machine that would do that is inexpensive, if that's possible, and portable that we could take and use. I have 65 subjects, and we're really looking forward to this. But I think that's the key to the experiment in terms of opening up the field, because it is the first dissertation in the field. Does anyone... You had your hand raised. Great.
Do you have that
green
one that you put your finger on each side of it? Do you have that one?
No.
What is it? Yeah, it's a Lawson Electronics, and you just put your fingers on either side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can get the probe that you attach to your finger. It beeps, and a light goes off.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought some extra ones with me if you're interested in looking at. They're only about $15.
Oh, it would be fun to try that. Yeah.
I'd like that.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody else have any comments, questions? This work has been very interesting because I've tried it in many different settings. I've tried it, sometimes my clients would become frantic, and I've tried it over the phone, changing thought forms in their auras over the phone. It works. I was really amazed. And I've tried it with animals, removing pain from animals who are going through trauma and things. So it's a really exciting field. I think it, all of you that decide to pursue it, it's much fun.
One of the thoughts I had, Roseanne, is to consider using a Centic analyzer. Are you familiar with Centics?
No.
Centic measures, Centics, S-E-N-T-I-C-S, measures the emotions of a person. And it consists of a pair of strain gauges, semiconductor strain gauges, where you have on a plate and you put your fingers on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a person just thinks of the seven different emotions: love, hate, anger, fear, joy, anxiety. And they go through that, and then a curve is generated on a strip chart recorder. If the person is normal or balanced, you get a normal curve. If they're disturbed, you'll get a shifted curve. So that is just a thought.
That sounds good. All right, I'll pursue that.
Now I'll have to find out where I can get somebody to make this for you. Isn't she sweet? Let's give her a big hug. One of the benefits I get of being able to hug beautiful women, my wife gets mad at me. She says, "Why do you hug all these people?" And I said, "It's a joy. It's a joy of seeing somebody that is beautiful, and you respond to their beauty." I showed you one crystal of the healing crystals, which was a four-sided crystal. I have another one here, and I make it only on very rare occasions for people who can handle it. And it is a six-sided crystal. This is cut for Dr. Leonard Laskow. This is his crystal. I brought it along to share and show to you. You generate enormous fields with a crystal of this type. Literally, you can knock a person over. But he uses this form in herpes, in the treatment of herpes, in the treatment of very intractable diseases in the female area. Dr. Laskow is a gynecologist and a specialist in various types of female disorders. This is made specifically for medical use, and another one I've made was for removal of hair, and hopefully for the restoration of hair. I said, hopefully, question mark. But that is being tried now, and at the end of the year, I will have a report and see how this is coming out. The joy of discovery is the willingness to try something and let the chips fall where they may. But try. The uncertainty level on this would blow you out. And so a person comes to me and said, "I would like something like this." I said, "All right, I'll try. That's all I can do." And then I make to my best effort. For example, the crystals that I made for the first 20 doctors, I made during the dead of winter.
and we have all of the lapidary equipment out in the garage with the doors open. The temperature was 35 to 40. Working in the water, I was shivering. The only thing that kept me going was the determination to succeed and that I want this done. And I come in blue, and my wife said, "Why are you so crazy? Why do you want to work so hard?" Because I wanted to complete these things. But out of those set of crystals has come a companionship, a friendship of a group that you can't find, I think, anyplace else in the world. They tested me for one solid year, month after month, till I was almost ready to drop. That faded, and now we are working together in harmony. I had an injury to my back. Dr. McGinnity was in Sacramento. He packed his bag of acupuncture equipment, drove down from Sacramento to San Jose, and worked on me for over 2 hours. I was punched and needled from head to toe. I've had every form of acupuncture applied to me. But I think his love did the greatest treatment. I had a spastic nerve in my leg. I fell into a jacuzzi pool and damaged my leg. But it is this type of comradeship I hope will take place with you here. We're all individuals. We're broaching the frontiers of science and technology. But let's get in and experience. Let's do things. But above all, do not criticize. Look for the good in each person. The speaker you had before here, a mother of nine, using radionics to keep her family in order, to look to how to put it into practice. That is reality. And this is my intention as well. One more thought and we'll get on to the videotape. One of the practical ways I use radionics, I will go along and suddenly I will get an impulse that I need a set of books. I go into a bookstore. I ask the following questions. What books are good for me now for the type of work and studies that I must apply in the immediate future? In other words, I go to my higher mind and ask. Then I pose the questions three times, directed to the entire mass of books, the thousands of books that are there. I take a deep breath, release the intention through my hands, and then I scan through the books this way, almost about this rate. I will pull out book, 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 without looking at the title. Then I sit down at the pile and said, now what is in this book that I can use in a practical and meaningful way? I've gone with my higher mind and I've got a stack, maybe $150 worth of books. Now how much do I want to spend on the books? Now the practical mind comes in, the rational mind, and I start the sifting. Then I got a smaller pile. And then the books that I can use immediately, and I can send to a little smaller pile. Then I buy those. I take these books then and leaf through them. I read the book in the following way. Start back here, and this is the reading of the book. And about this rate. Take the book then and put it beside my bed. Then ask the question, what is in this book that I can use now in my work? Beside my bed. Get up in the morning, usually go in the bathroom. That's where most of the great ideas and thoughts are generated. Nobody else bothers you. Open the book up like this and start reading. Most remarkable, precise information is there. You read it, annotate it into a secondary notebook, and go to work. I've got thousands of books that way. I've not read one completely. But that is how I amass my library. Because to read a book like that completely would clutter your mind with unnecessary information. If you have the book, you know what's in it, you index it. What I did in this scanning is an indexing of the book. I start from the back and go forward. And in so doing, subliminally, you've seen everything that's in this book. And you have an enormous ability to rapid scan. I have in the laboratory at IBM a tape recorder that will play at twice the speed of normal. So now I have from the American Chemical Society courses on nuclear magnetic radiation, NMR, on all forms of infrared, ultraviolet spectra, tape courses, dozens and dozens of tapes. So I'll allot a time each day to listening this way. Now put it on, listen at normal voice, and then push up the speed up to the point where it almost sounds garbled, and give it a little crank beyond that, and then I listen. The remarkable thing, your normal memory stores little, but your subliminal memory, your higher self, absorbs everything. And the beautiful thing about this is that when you ask questions, how wonderfully you can recall, because it comes out in beautiful hunks that you can assemble into the patterns that you create new ideas with. The worst thing you can do is to sit down and go clunk, 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 read in the slow, systematic way if you want to store information. Now, if you want, however, to integrate that information into an overall plan, now I take paragraph after paragraph. I'll take a paragraph and read it 3-4 times and look for key words. Then I'll take that transparent marker and pull out key words and then write them on the margin of the book. All of my books are written up, marked. Ideas are inscribed. Ideas on the left-hand side, keywords on the right. And so as I go through the book again, I look for keywords. Key sorting with keywords. And as you systematize the storage of information, you start to amass a magnificent library of knowledge that you can use throughout your life. I started this about 10 years of age on the field of luminescence. I have about 8,000 to 9,000 original publications still on file. I can pull any one of these papers at a moment's notice. I've done the same thing in my videotape library and all information that I've accumulated throughout my life. Now, let's go to the camera. If there is, before we do that, if there are any questions you wanted to ask me on what you saw this morning on the camera, yes.
How did you get that paper back?
How did I get what?
How did you get that paper on our camera?
Oh boy, that was a miracle. It was a miracle because, first of all, it was created like a rock of Gibraltar. 150 pounds of crating to hold the box. Lavender Dower had put a price tag on that of $10,000. So, I came to customs declaring it at something that was unworkable with an assessed valuation of about $35 to $40. And the customs inspector came out and said, "What are you trying to do to me?" Because my evaluation was $35 and they had a valuation of $10,000. "Are you trying to practice fraud? I said, "No. It is an unworkable piece of equipment. It is something I want to look at and explore and see what I can do with it. I was absolutely frank with him. I have a wonderful gentleman by the name of Harold Tracy who had a lawyer who is a customs lawyer. He said, let me see what I could do. So he went to work from the legal standpoint. I went to work from the prayer standpoint. And I said, dear Lord, if it is for me to have this camera, make it possible, because I don't have $1,000. It was about $1,200 they wanted through customs. And so the lawyer took the case at no cost to me, except a box of candy, and he got it through customs at a valuation of $32. So I had to pay $32 to get this through customs. They were going to open it, and they never opened it, because when they tried to take these interlacing beams apart, they would have had to use a double set of crowbars, and they didn't want to get into that, so they let it go. It was 1 month getting from New York to San Francisco. We did dowsing on it. We saw it ended up in Washington. It ended up in Philadelphia. It had gone throughout the country. It must have been x-rayed, looked at, and examined. And finally, I said a prayer. I said, I want that camera here. Because it was bouncing all over and the camera never arrived. So one day it showed up. I finally got the camera. So call it what you may, that's how the thing came about. Pardon? No! I wrote another letter to Cortea, said I want one of your Delaware instruments, you know, your regular radionic instruments. Right through the Megla mail I got it in 2 weeks' time. That is right. It's an agricultural soil test instrument to measuring soil. So it has a soil rate analysis on the left-hand column. Through regular mail, he sends me all the other rates. So I have all the regular rates, but on it, it's a soil test kit. It costs about 200 and some odd pounds, which is about $350. You can buy them now. Anytime they're available, I have them. I have another new instrument. I'll be going in October to the Radionic Association and giving to their group a course of instruction on the use of crystals in radionics to amplify the signal, to bring to better focus what is being done with their equipment. The next time I be with you, you will be a recipient of these information, because we will have had then 1 year of practical testing radionically with crystals in England of about 30 people. The top practitioners will be using them. So that's how I got it. Isn't that surprising?
No.
Because I had an impulse one day. I wrote to Lavender Dower. I said, I would like to get the instrument. She wrote back, it would cost me $1,500 to crate and ship it airmail. The next day, Dr. Ben Ichinos, a friend of mine, I told him what I was going to do and I would like to do is get that equipment. He sat down and wrote me out a check for $1,500. So that's how the equipment, I had the money to get the equipment shipped. But when you ask, it is given to you, and when you're free and open about it, these things come. No further words, let's put on the videotape. And it is not the best, but you will see what the inside looks like.
Physical dimensions of this cabinet are 41 inches tall, 26 inches, 20 or 25 and a half inches square. The top box is 17 and 7/8 by 20 inches, and it stands 11 inches tall, 4 3/8 inches off the main box. Electrically connected to the power source of the cabinet in any way. Apparently their physical placement is of some importance. The measurements on these knobs are center to center, 4 5/8, 4 11/16, and 7 5/8 across, and they appear to be all equally placed at a distance, whatever that be divided by. Jack here, there's a jack on each of the three main panels. This apparently is for the remote sensor box. It's a single pole jack. It has no secondary connector inside. We have a light in the approximate center of the box, measuring 25 and a quarter inches from the bottom and centered in the front center of the panel. There's also a switch on top. We have two metallic plates, and between them a rotating dial. The dial has numbers on it going from 0 over here, 30, 60, 90, 180, 270, 330, back to 0 again. There is no, I guess there is an arrow on the knob. It rotates freely all the way around. There are no stops on it. It's connected, as we have seen previously, not on film yet, to a magnetic rod that goes down several inches into the cabinet. There's apparently a coil of wire on each of the three knobs that is connected approximately where my finger is. It appears to be about a half an inch in diameter and about 1 inch in length. It has two wires wound in a small coil appearing to be about an eighth of an inch in diameter going over to each of these plates. It's connected about where my finger is. So these plates are electrically connected. There's a path between them. As near as we can tell, it is not connected electrically to anything else in the box. The panel, each of the three panels is isolated. There are no wires going from one set of panels to the other, just between each set. This area up here is where the electrical or the photographic plate is inserted. There's a piece of felt over the opening. The photographic plate, it has two clips which slide open and the box opens. One of which is improperly positioned. The plate has a cutout and is broken. It's cracked here, it's partially cracked here, and totally cracked over here as a result of the fall, most likely. Replace that holder back in. The plate has a engraved cutout for, I suppose, the photographic plate to be set in there. There's nothing else of real interest, it looks like, on this. There's a ridge that runs the diameter or the circumference of the box, and a matching ridge on the cover, so it should be quite light tight when closed. I noticed that on the handle there's a little metal strip which does not have an obvious function. This one is partially broken. If we look on the other side, we'll see a little tab that sticks out and a screw that goes in the center. This tab is slightly bent outward at the end. They do not line up, and when you close it, you can see the tab here. On the other side, no tab. It's broken. and the latch is closed, and you've got a white tight box. I note that when I pulled it out originally, that the broken side was in this position, on the left as you're facing it. And it slides in, apparently catching on a ledge that goes in between, catches underneath this ledge right here. And it slides in a very snug manner. The other side, which we have taken off. This is apparently an identical set of knobs to what we saw on the front face. We have not taken the front face off, so we can only suppose that it's identical. We have, again, the switch on this side, which has one wire broken. This wire is apparently for this panel, noting that this wire is broken.
It is broken?
It is broken off. The solder connection is broken. It's just a matter of resoldering it. This wiring is a plastic wiring or plastic insulation that is apparently much more recent than the age of the box, so presumably the box has been rewired. You can see some wiring inside here. This wire goes to the jack on the front panel that we saw previously. A second wire goes to the middle of the front panel, and third wire goes into this section, and as we'll see in a moment, it continues on out the other side. This bulb here is the one that was in the middle. It's the same as we saw in the front panel. As you'll note, the wood has been painted silver on this top platform and all around anything that's apparently involving any of the wiring. I was unable to determine if the paint is slightly conductive. It could be. Hard to say what effect that has. And it's also interesting to note that there's a corner that's created here, apparently an identical corner created on the other side of this front panel. I don't know whether that's purposeful or just functional in that it holds this switch panel or the potentiometer panel in place. Now, we have removed the cover previously on this other side. It cannot remove it completely because of the wire that passes through, the ground wire. As you can see inside here, it also goes to a screw which has lugs connected to it, wires going to the jack panel on this, the jack connector on this side panel, and a third wire which you can see going through this floor plate. It goes to a terminal strip and then connects to the main power cable, the ground connection on that mount on that main power cable. This whole board is loose and comes partially out. It cannot come fully out because it is connected to the ground wire. That's the only electrical connection to this panel. Each of these switches, or these, I don't know what to call them actually, these rotary switches, rotates on a metal spring plate. You can see the action of it as I turn it around. It's pushing up with spring force against a commutator. There is no electrical connection to these except for the ground connection at the end of each of these wires. Purpose or function is unknown at this point. They are all apparently identical. They have no electrical resistance. It's not a potentiometer as we commonly understand the term. The composition of the wires connecting these is not clear. One of them, the one I have my finger on, is slightly bent. It's the only one that is in the, well, it's slightly bent, so is this one. The others are straight. They're soldered to a common connector in the back at fairly equal intervals, but not certainly not precisely equal intervals. It's perhaps possible that the lengths of these wires are important. And in the back corner corner of this box. The vibrator. I don't know if you can read the label. It says Radiaire, R-A-D-I-A-R-E, vibrator. A part number which appears to be VN-10, input 6 volts, the Radiart Corporation, Cleveland, Ohio, USA, H5 on the bottom. This can appears to have been bent by the spring force of the clip holding it. It's very well pushed in at both places here. The wiring that comes into it on the bottom goes to two opposing pins. There are no electrical connections on the other pins. We have not yet looked at it electrically to see what output is on the other pins. We don't know if it's... we suppose that it is AC going in. My knowledge of these things is that they usually run off DC. But with the technology of the time, the transformers, which we'll see in a minute, I don't believe... Okay. The other thing to notice about this particular section of the camera is this rod that sticks down from above. It's the rod that is rotated by the dial that we pointed out earlier on top. I'm told that it's magnetic, definitely magnetic. It's the north or south pole here. And we'll check that out further at a later date. Okay. We're going to turn the box around. You want to do it up in here first, yeah, or down here? Okay, now we're looking inside the photographic section of the camera. We can see down here the place where the holder for the photographic plate sits. You can see, when I pull this out, the hole that lies there. Inside we have three sets of lenses. Each lens has a focal length of 2 7/8 inches. The lenses are mounted exactly that distance away from the center of these spherical mirrors. The mirrors, or the lenses themselves, all seem to point towards the same spot on the photographic plate. It's the center of the plate. The lenses are 6 1/2 inches away from that center. I should also note that the three magnetic rods that we saw on the top of the box underneath this photographic section are all in line with that point. My finger is approximately where those lenses are centered.
Do that again, please.
Okay, my finger, let me get this over here, is approximately where those lenses, the three lenses, are centered. The three magnetic rods are also oriented about this point. There's one rod for each lens. Now notice that one of these lenses has a mechanism attached to it. This mechanism is two polarizer plates. They're plastic plates. There's one on top that does not rotate. There's another one underneath, separated by about 1/16 of an inch. And turning this knob, which tends to stick a little. Okay, turning this knob, which comes out the back of this camera, rotates the bottom polarizer plate. Turning it around once turns the polarizer plate around once. So there are two locations on here where the plates are opposed, and two when they're completely aligned. Purpose and effect unknown at this point. Of perhaps no particular interest, I don't really know. There's a plate at the front of this camera. It's the front wall. Is a false wall. It's distance from the back of the box is 10 inches. It leaves about 4 1/2 inches to the true front. I don't know if there's anything in front of that box or that wall. It could be, just to make it a nice square box for the unit. Nothing much happening on this panel, with the exception of the power inlet. It's a 3-prong plug. It's made for 200 and It's supposed to run from 200 to 250, nominally 220 volts AC. We don't know whether this was 50 or 60 hertz, probably 50 hertz, but I doubt that it'll make a difference. The hole up here is for a switch. It controls, it's a power switch. It's in series with one of the lines of the connector. These three prongs here are in a triangular formation. One of them is on top, that's the ground.
The top part of the camera is a sounding box. It picks up the vibration. That double wall is made to resonate to an acoustic tone. Each one of the sections that you saw, which have the rotating knobs, are filled according to the golden section. They exactly follow the golden sections. We have taken exact measurements of those, and they follow that exactly. So there is a very close following to the mathematics that is contained within the pyramid and the pyramid form inside this box. It is a very complex piece of machinery in which I believe, in summary, we find a conversion of sound into light, conversion of sound which is modulated by thought, by the various vibrations that you set up in these stretched wires, to produce particles of energy which then impact on the plate as you see. And when they are all properly focused, you can then produce images from either the astral or mental plane. As you move up into the higher dimensions, the form geometry goes down and you go more into geometric shapes and particle physics. This is where we are now. The future, we plan to go at a number of elements, very pure elements of 5/9 purity, and keep repeating until we can get repeated results with the systematic tracks that we are finding. The other stage that we are following is going into image amplification by means of liquid crystal plates, which I am now making, by means of phosphor amplification, use of various types of vacuum phosphor plates, the same type of materials that are used in X-ray amplifying screens. Now, if I get an amplification with any one of these type of phosphors or materials, I immediately have a handle on the type of particle or energy I am dealing with. But my final goal is to get directly into the Vidicon pool. Now, I think that is enough for the Delaware camera. You are the very first people in the world to have seen this outside of our small group, and it has never been shown before. And you have had a chance now to see the outside, the operation, and the inside. I brought the notebook with me. I'd be glad when we finish to go over more of the plates with you and spend a little more time before I go to sleep this evening. It's been a wonderful joy. You're a wonderful group, and thank you for your attention. Thank you. Give a big hand here to Jerry here, who has been so much of a help to me. So wonderful.
Are you?
something about it. Yeah, but you get used to it soon. It's close.
Right.